is I'm not sure, although I have seen a very nice graphic on the GPS operation on the internet. I forget what the site of it is, but I think if you Google it, it'll come up. It's a very nice graphic that shows the correlation process and everything. Go ahead.
Who is speaking right now? I'm not sure who you are.
I'm sorry. This is WA2 Victor David Henry John. Okay.
Very fine, John. It sounds like you've worked on IDEN and similar CDMA-like systems.
I remember reading quite a bit about it. When I was at Bell Labs, there was quite a bit of work going on at that time with the CDMA phones that were just coming in. At that time, they were sort of still on the drawing board, but there was quite a lot of stuff going on at the labs at that time. Go ahead.
When you were at Bell Labs, did you know a guy named Reed Fisher?
I was at Naperville. I think that name probably was more at Murray Hill or Homedale. Go ahead.
You got it exactly right. I think it was Murray Hill. And from my point of view, he's one of the major inventors of, at least early developers of what we now call the cell phone system. And typical of engineers, he didn't get the credit for the work he was doing in 1969, 1970, 1971. Wesley, I know you wanted to make comments on all of the above. N2XJN, K2RIW on the TechNet.
N2XJN. Well, in general, rule of recovery of the weak signal, actually the major device that is being used is one that is being known as the locking amplifier or the phase-sensitive detector. It is actually the same. So what it does is extract the signal from the non-carrier wave from very noisy environment, and yes, at that point we take the to consideration the phase shift. Yes, it could go to minus 60 dB with a certain dissipation that is needed, and the essentially the Homodyn utilized a very low pass filter. Actually, it makes this very narrow band. Let me drop. So actually, that locking amplifier is mixing the frequency through the frequency mixer, the phase and amplitude, and is actually diverting it to the DC at a time very low frequency voltage signal. If I say it properly, do you understand something from that? Okay. And then it measures the phase shift of the signal at that very high signal-to-noise ratio. That's what it does. So the recovery signal is being done through the reference signal of the same frequency versus the received signal. That's the major rule of the weak signal. Now, how is that particularly differ from that what we're discussing? It's probably the way of applying that general law of what I described. Back to you.
If I had a very weak pilot tone in the noise, a real carrier, in theory, I can set a very narrow phase lock loop, a so-called lock-in amplifier, and I can zero my receiver onto that signal. If I'm transmitting a carrier, and at a very rapid rate, 1 million times per second, I flip in phase, 180 degrees out of phase, and then in phase, exactly 50% of the time. That's what the modulation of the gold code is. 50% of the time, it's in phase. 50% of the time it's out of phase. You do that with a carrier. There is no carrier left. There is no pilot tone to look at. You look at that signal on a spectrum analyzer. It's a box head of noise that's 1 megacycle wide. It's got a couple of frequency components in there across the 1 megacycle. But by definition, because it spends 50% of its time in phase and 50% of its time out of phase, it thoroughly cancels its carrier. there is no carrier to lock on. In 2XJM, T2LIW.
Well, yes, you're right. You're completely right. But the thing is that the general rule of the discovery of that weak signal detection from that actually popped to my attention because I was looking for the amplifier of the signal from the generator. So then I went to the history of all of this stuff, and I popped to the Princeton University physicist, and that was the Dick, Mr. Dick, Robert Dick. And actually, he was the one who actually invented the locking amplifier at first. So that's from him that was actually the detection of the weak signal invented, and then it was applied to various numbers of applications. And one of them we discussed today. Back to you.
Okay, it's a very unique system. The other system that uses the Reed-Solomon technique, which is being used by K1, why can't I think of his call it is right now? The technique that guys are using for a week, very weak signal, all of a sudden the technique has gone out of my brain. What was that again?
One JT, Joe Taylor, my cousin.
You got it. Is he really your cousin?
That's funny. My last name is Schneider. There's a half the family that changed their name, that they translated the last name Schneider, which is German, into English is Taylor. And I asked, and some of them, one cousin says, I believe that we have him as a cousin, over.
Yeah, I think they call it the WSJT, Weak Signal Joe Taylor Technique. I think it's different than TSK31. But K1JT is the inventor of this Reed-Solomon-like technique of transmitting these four tones in various combinations, which allows you to send the whole alphabet and the numbers scheme. And he, again, can get the signals that are 28 dB below the noise and get good demodulation out of it. So the guys who are doing this with meteor scatter and moon bounce and whatever, they're having a grand old time. In fact, you know that there's a big controversy now because the guys who are doing moon bounce by conventional hearing of Morse code with earphones takes them many years to work quite a large number of states with moon bounce, and one well-equipped guy with his WSJT, which gives him about a 15 or so decibel advantage, in 1 month can work the same number of moon bounce signals and take credit for it. And so the older guys think it's a bit unfair, but that's the way progress is. I bet you got some opinions about all this, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, Roger. Yes, well, of course, you know, a lot of people will always balk at, you know, the changes in the technology. And I know the resentment that was there, Dick. Go back to the resentment that when we became ham, some of the so-called old-timers didn't like the idea that we were able to come in on an easier venue by becoming novices. When they came up with a novice license, it was like too easy to, you know, for people to get into ham radio. So there's people that, you know, always will fight the technology. I'm sure that the people that operated the early days of Spark fought that the coming of the vacuum tube and so on and so forth. So this is the progression, and I embrace it, Dick. This is the way we should be always going. Improving technology, over.
Okay, it's getting a little bit late, but before we close down, I want to know, Wesley, that beautiful movie that you sent over to me, where you sent me the email address to the movie, which we can play back, and I guess various people, if they send you a request, you could tell them what is the address for that one, where that nice piece of equipment was demonstrated in that Sheraton hotel, across that 10-foot table with a tablecloth on it. I wonder if the equipment you have constructed is at all similar in operation or technique to that particular YouTube video. N2XJN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yes, to XGN. It is very much similar to that one that is being utilized. The only thing is that I'm not dealing with the direct frequency, but utilizing the capacitive coupling. That's what was used in this video. What I was trying to say about the scalar wave is that if you imagine that you have a 10 light bulbs, or let's say 100 light bulbs, and all of these light bulbs are set at the same place, or you have a 10 people, 100 people, and one next to the other, one push the other, then the thing is that activation, it is not loss of the energy, it's an activation of the state. It's like I say, okay, I see you, you see another person, there is no loss of the energy. If we can imagine that you have an eye from left side on the right side, or if you imagine yourself as the figure that has a six corners, and you see all of these people in front of you. So the whole theory of the about this color wave, is activation of the next person or next point into you. And that's how it works. That's why when he covers with his hand, let me drop, the antenna of receiver at the frequency of 7 megahertz, it didn't disturb it. In other words, he is trying to prove that you can communicate at any point at the earth. Just using the earth. Back to you.
Yeah, to go to your example, if I had 100 people lined up, and person number one pushes on person number two, and when person number two senses that, he pushes on person number three, I can create a wave that travels along those 100 people, and the wave, depending on how hard those guys push, the wave can get stronger or weaker, but the wave keeps propagating. And what's going on in a case like that is that each individual person has his own food in his stomach, he has his own power supply, and he's deciding when the trigger happens, he's going to respond by pushing the person in front of him. There's some similarity between that and the way the individual cells of a nerve inside of the human body works, the way the signal is transmitted along the nerve. And so, is that somewhat similar to what you're calling a scalar wave? Back to you, Wesley, KQRIW.
Yes, it is. Actually, the human body utilizes the scalar wave. The only difference is that in the example that was presented by the German scientist, who is a professor of German university, and he could not possibly do the trick, as in Germany, nobody would even think about doing the tricks when we're talking about the science. It's simply out of the question. Anyhow, by pushing another person, you are actually using the energy. The thing is that with the scalar waves, it's activation. It's not actually the propagation, but it's activation. So when you see, let's say, 100 people in front of you, or you see 5 people in front of you, you actually see them. And when you see the second person, just by seeing another person, that means you are the receiver and he is the receiver, you're able to activate it. So we may actually imagine yourself that once you see this person, let's say you didn't see this person for some whatever reason, before you didn't pay attention to this person, you activate another person. That's the whole principle of the scalar wave, and that's what I say happened to me. It happened to me that capacitive coupling actually start to work for some strange reason, although Kapanadze did it before, a young Russian guy did it before, and Tesla did it before. Back to you.
Have you had a chance to duplicate that experiment in your laboratory, and possibly by slightly improving the layout of the equipment to make it a little bit more reproducible? I wonder if you're deciding to move in the direction of making the equipment more reproducible so that you can give a demonstration on cue when required. Over to you, Wesley.
Well, here's what I did. By moving my elbow and actually triggering the transfer with no expectation that it's going to work at all and not even thinking about it, after that, what I did is I say, okay, if I did it one time, how many potentially chances do I have to trigger it? And I was trying, but I couldn't. So very next week, I spent $10,000 for the new equipment. And actually, I decided I'm going to go to this from quite different approach. And the last piece of equipment that I have got that I needed for the purpose of experimenting with the square waves or the waves of any kind, I have purchased AWG2041, which actually goes to 500 megahertz of square waves. So it's a beautiful one with the screen, and that's what I was talking with John for quite a while about it, and also with Eric. Back to you.
So I think you're saying you're making a modification, a slightly different approach with the new equipment, and you're going to try to confirm. In the case of the signals traveling along a nerve inside of a human being, those individual cells of the nerve, I think, have individual sources of energy. They're being recharged after each cycle, so to speak, by the chemical energy or whatever the metabolism that's taking place locally. When a signal is transmitted capacitively, by capacitive coupling and earth coupling, from the transmitters on the left side of that movie to the right side of the movie, where the energy in between is coming from, where the charge and discharge and excess energy is coming from, is not quite clear to many people watching that movie. Is that sort of true, Alex, N2XJN, K2RIW?
Wesley, N2XJN. Here's the situation. In the body, you have the cells at the same position. So the scalar waves, if you imagine them being at the same position, you may see that each cell has, yes, its individual dual power source. Now, if we take into consideration the term of the potential energy versus the kinetic energy, then the activation of the potential energy will be in the form of kinetic energy. So at that point, we're saying that, okay, we have a capacitive coupling. Each of the points would have the potential energy, and it is only activating all the energy that is already there. That's one of the way to approach that. Back to you, Antoine.
If you're activating the energy that was already there, how did that energy get there? And if you're doing the experiment for 5 solid minutes, who is recharging that energy in those various places during the 5 minutes? Over to you, Wesley.
Well, I have a good answer for it. I'm going to remind you the example of what I actually said on the TechNet, that let's say you have two magnets. Each one is 10 pounds magnets apart from themselves in a vertical pattern. So if we're talking about perpetual motion over unity, or the kinetic energy versus potential energy versus kinetic energy, we might say that everything that is longer than human life is kind of a perpetual motion to the human being. So if you come to this point 10 years later, you see this magnet apart, and then 100 years later, somebody else might see that they are a little bit less apart than they were there, but the energy is still there. We're talking about movement of this magnet with heat in the period of 24 hours, so we're talking, because of the circulation of the magnetic field of the Earth, so we're talking also about transfer of the potential energy to the kinetic energy. And then one may ask the question,
oh.
what this extra potential energy is coming from, because then another day you see the magnet being a little bit up. So my understanding is that if you can analyze how this energy gets there, you can explain how these color waves are being activated. Back to you.
If I took two toroid-shaped magnets and magnetized them in the axis going through the toroid, and if I stacked those two magnets onto a plastic rod, and I stacked them in such a direction that the two north poles are facing each other, one magnet sits on the table, the other magnet sits an inch above the first magnet because it's being magnetic repelled. North is looking at north. And if I push those two magnets together, I will sense a force. If I lift the upper magnet, I will sense a little bit less force. But that magnetic repulsion obeys somewhat like a spring. I can have a spring, I can put a weight on top of the spring, and I can compress the spring. And if the spring is made out of good materials, it'll hold up that weight for a long time. If the magnetic toroids are made out of the right materials, they will stay repulsed and apart from each other for a very long time. Whether or not you call that energy or you call that repulsion, spring-like repulsion, I'm having trouble calling that excess energy, if you know what I mean. As long as I've used the right material so they don't lose magnetic field, those two magnets on that plastic rod will stay apart from each other for many years. But as I push them together, I've done some work. When I release them, or if I release them slowly, they do work back on me. The input work and the output work, I think, are going to be very close to each other. There may not be any gain. Back to you for a comment on that, Wesley. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Comment.
Wesley first, and then we'll go over to John.
Let me put it this way. You have a firebox in your pocket, I bought a beer, although I don't drink the beer. And then you have a losses. But let's say you had enough of money to not only buy the beer, but actually to support yourself for your life. And this is actually access of energy compared to another guy who has to go to work. Now, whether this money is going to end up, you don't care because you have enough for the normal life. Now, then another guy is looking at you and he says, well, you have access of something that I don't have. Now, we're looking about at the situation in which we have two magnets that within the lifetime of the human being will be so apart. Now, if you push that magnet, it's gonna work. You have a kinetic energy transferred to the potential energy transferred to kinetic energy. For some strange reason, is still recovering. So my understanding is that you are recovering from buying that beer because you have access of energy. At the same time, the scalar wave has a potential wave, a potential energy, that even if they use a part of it to the kinetic, they still have this energy. So if you cannot answer the question how come this energy comes back from the magnet, you cannot give the answer how the scalar wave has the energy to be activated. Back to you.
I have to think about that for a while. John, can you make this all a little more clear for us?
Well, I'll clear up one thing. Wesley had a beer at my house. I don't care what he said. But to get back to the experiment on the table, Dick, the conversation between you and Wesley reminds me of a subject that I'm now involved in, quantum mechanics. Could the coupling be similar to the effect of the photon that was split and the rotational spin and the coupling effects of the two photons. Something like that. Maybe Wesley is really on the fringe of something.
Yeah, a number of famous people, Richard Feynman among others, said that when you really understand quantum mechanics, which is not easy, it differs an awful lot from common sense. In common sense, if I have an object and I move it from point A to point B, I can describe the path by which I move it. If I have a microscopic particle, like an electron, that I move from point A to point B, it doesn't take one path, it takes all possible paths at once. You could say, my understanding of that is it's sort of a cloud of charge that is moving. And it's a little hard for us to picture. I mean, that's how a photon can go through a double slit, and one single photon after the slit still appears on the screen beyond with an interferometry pattern. That it wasn't the photon choosing to go through one slit or the other. The photon went through both slits because it's sort of a cloud of energy. I'm only making some guesses here. That's my partial understanding. Over to you, John.
Dick, you're absolutely right. What the mystery is, and it's difficult for me being an old-timer, Newtonian physics, forget it. Relativistic physics, forget it. It doesn't apply in quantum theory. So when you do observe the particle, you lose the wave. When you observe the wave, you lose the particle. That duality of confliction makes it very confusing, and you have to read, well, at least I do, I have to read a paragraph sometimes three times before I realize what they're talking about. Very complicated. But I'm wondering if something like that could be happening, because it seems like it's fighting common sense all the time, just like quantum mechanics.
Wesley, at the rate at which you're gathering instruments and constructing new equipment, what's your best guess as to when you will be constructing your next experiment for energy transfer from point A to point B, where you might get a gain? When do you believe that next experiment might take place, Wesley?
Q2, QAQ with a comment.
Wesley first, and then Glenn next. Go ahead, Wesley.
Well, at first, I'm trying to understand what I'm doing. What I have done was something that was actually expected in terms of when I was thinking about doing something, I was basing on the Tesla experiment and also the Capanaz and a few others. Actually, there's another one. Not going deep to that. What I was trying to say is that if we cannot really give the answer why the electron is spinning around with no external energy delivery, and we cannot give the answer why the two magnets actually recover to 100% of the potential energy, even though that energy was used, that's the biggest proof of the factor that probably a capacitive coupling that I was describing and the capacitive coupling that was shown on the video had something to do with the magnetism of the Earth. That is so the solar waves might be the primary cause of what's happening. It is only the amplification by actually energizing the ferrite particles in order to get that gain. Back to you, Dick, and to Jim.
Okay, let's think about that some more. Glenn, go ahead.
Mine was just a simple comment, Dick, about quantum mechanics. And, you know, quantum mechanics is really a model at particle level. And you're kind of making some assumptions with a model at particle level, and you're looking at things in moments of time. So you're actually stopping something in a moment and then applying a model at the particle level. So, but actually to apply that to a system level of things, it really doesn't apply anymore because the models really aren't set up that way. KC2, QIQ.
to what you would do to try to confirm the effects that we're discussing.
Well, I guess I'm kind of old school in this area, and I would have to draw it out on paper. I mean, I would draw a box, and I would say, okay, you put a certain amount of power in, you got a box out, a port coming out with this power coming out, and then I'd have to put some kind of third port inside there, and then determine what I'm going to call that third port. That third port's got to be some power coming from somewhere, or energy coming from somewhere, and then I got to put a name to it, even if it's imaginary energy, give it a name, and then start modeling it from that standpoint, and then put some mathematics to it, and give that a name, and say, okay, we know what power factor is. You got volts times amps, and, you know, at some angle, and that's going to be some percentage of real power. Maybe you could call it the invert power factor, where basically you have some phase relationship that creates some power greater than the real power. But here again, you'd have to put some kind of model to it first and try to understand what it is. I think instead of trying to go the other way, and unless you can prove it all the time, it's very hard to put math to it. KC2QIQ.
Wesley, you were saying earlier that the Earth's magnetic field is part of the excess energy. Does that say that if I took the apparatus in question, transported it to the lunar surface, assuming that the moon has no magnetic field, do you believe that the excess energy would disappear in that environment? N2XJN, K2RIW?
No, it will not. When you have a mass, then you have all of the properties of the mass, and one of the properties of the mass is magnetic field. Am I right?
Yeah, the reason why I chose the lunar surface is because I believe that the capacitance would stay the same as long as you keep the geometries of the probes or electrodes the same. The mass of the materials would stay the same, just that you would be essentially removed from local magnetic field of the planet. I think you're saying you believe that it would continue to operate the same way on the lunar surface as it does on the Earth's surface. Back to you, K2RIW.
Confusing gravity with magnetism.
Well, you still got gravity on the moon. I mean, the moon's got 1/6 of gravity. If I got 1/6 the operation out of it, but still a gain, I'd be happy. Wesley?
Well, let me give you a little bit of example. Okay, when the astronauts were on the moon, then with their power that they had from their organs, because of a weighting 1/6 of the weight that they have on the planet Earth, they were able to jump much higher. But we're talking that they had the same amount of energy within themselves, but they were able to actually make much more improvement in their movement. So we may say at the same time that either they were using 6 times less of the energy to have the same task to be done, but at the same time the overall power stays the same. When you have less current flowing, then you're trying to measure the work being done in joules, it comes because the factor of the less magnetic field, it comes to the same effective power. Did I describe it properly, Dick? And to understand?
Yes, I think you did. By the way, the spacesuits that the astronauts wore during the Apollo mission weigh something like 200 pounds. You essentially cannot use them on the Earth. In the zero gravity, the zero buoyancy tank, you can. Lots of studies have shown that when you put a backpack on a man who's doing hiking, you can go up to 35 pounds, and beyond that, there's sort of a sound barrier where his range of hiking goes down very fast as you go above 35 pounds. The 200-pound spacesuit on the moon with 1/6 gravity was okay, but you don't want to go very much beyond that. So you can practice with that spacesuit in the zero buoyancy tank, but an astronaut really can't walk around with that spacesuit fully equipped on planet Earth. But mass when you go to a low-gravity environment, all of your objects still have the same amount of mass. When you want to accelerate them and decelerate them, it requires the same amount of force. Just it's easier to lift them off the ground. Into XJN, CQRIW.
Oh, yes, if we take the factor of how much the weight is on the person versus how much is the gravity, and still we come to the point that the astronauts were able to perform much better than in the Earth, then we're talking about the benefits of less friction and less gravity on that surface. But what I was trying to prove was that in any environment, when we have a mass, we have a magnetic field, and at that point, at any environment, even at the small bodies, solar bodies, we could have this device working. My question is only if the solar wave could work at the space station, because it does have a certain mass. That I don't know. But definitely the solar waves are snapped to the mass of unity. That means the Earth is a certain unity. I don't believe that the solar wave could work from one cosmic body to the other cosmic body. Back to you.
Comment.
Let me ask Wesley a quick question. Your audio sounds quite good tonight. You are transmitting 5 KC high. I'm curious to find out how you would sound if you transmitted right on frequency. Want to give that a try, yeah, Wesley?
Okay, this is November 2, X-ray Juliet November, on the frequency that it's supposed to be at. Back to you.
The effect is back again. You are right on frequency, and it's distorted. Please go back to 5 KC high. You know what to do, and that's a mystery as to why it works that way. Over to you, John.
Dick, quickly, back to your original question to Wesley, it was, did you think it would work on an object without a magnetic field? We're not talking about gravity, and he was mixing the two of them. Now, was that the question you asked him? Because the moon, being a dead planet, no core, no melting thing, has very, very little magnetic information as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure that Wesley understood the question when I asked, without the Earth's magnetic field, by going to the moon, he believes it would continue to work as it is on the Earth. Isn't that what you said there, Wesley?
Yes, because if you have something that is 6 pounds or 60 pounds and now is 6 times less, at the same magnetic field of the Earth, the consumption of the overall power is 6 times less. So the efficiency is 6 times more. At the same time, we take the surface of the moon, and we have everything that is actually 6 times less, but is at the same time, requires a 6 times less of power. We come to the same condition as on the Earth structure, because the overall power measured in joules will be exactly the same. Back to you.
Continue, Dick.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
But Wesley, are you saying that if we move to a different object and it has gravity and no magnetic field, will your item still work? Because it doesn't mean it has gravitational field just because it has mass.
Well, the gravity actually is directly snapped to the magnetic field. Anything has a magnetic field. The difference between you sitting right now in front of your radio with your mass of your body, and the Earth structure is tight. But everything is the magnetic field. Back to you.
Okay, back to you, Dick.
You probably have heard, Wesley, there is a famous Russian saying, there is nothing new under the moon. I bet you've heard that one. Is that true?
Yes.
I know it doesn't apply here, just that I throw it in. I've got to go to work tomorrow. I know that your significant other is saying that you should be getting enough sleep and going to bed early. And except for Sunday nights, she gives you permission to stay up a little later. I know that Mel, he's the only guy here that's really retired. The rest of us are working. Mel, why don't you say some final words and pass it back to me. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Okay, well, I still work, but I make my own power. See, it's a different situation these days, you know. I call the rules now. It's nice once in a while finally to be somewhat of what they say, a so-called boss. Anyhow, yes, I was listening, and I didn't really want to put my two cents in, but the magnetic theory, basically, I was reading just some final words, actually, they used to call it in physics as the four fundamental forces of gravity, electromagnetic, and weak or strong magnetic. And part of the whole thing is all part of the four fundamental forces. And I know there was a lot more to it, but I never paid a lot of attention to quantum mechanics and things like that. Never understood. They know they did a couple of... Eric will tell you, I forgot about the ones they did on PBS on string theory. It's another one I just really never grasped, Dick. So, okay, catch you next week. Have a nice week, you guys. Take care, and I stay cool. This is K2KEY saying good night.
Dick, should I understand that you like me so much that you decided to stay 47 minutes longer than usual, or the subject was so fascinated?
That could be it, Wesley. I'm not quite sure what it all is. This was TechNet number 1,312 of the series that began 27 and a half years ago, almost 28 years ago, September of 1982. 73, you all. We're going to try to settle these physics issues next week. No guarantees, but we'll keep hacking away at it. Bye-bye, you all. Be kind to each other, and see you guys down the log. K2LIW clear.
Thank you, Dick. Good night.
Thank you, Dick. Good night.
See you later, John, Wesley, and Mel.
KT2WGBN to XGN.
And to XGN, KT2WGB.
John, my friend, I can bring you back your slaver. It's a beautiful piece of equipment, but I don't need it any longer. And my wife wants to make a bread for you, so she asked me what time I'm gonna visit you and what day would that be, so she can do it.
Wesley, I'd like to set it up for next Saturday, and we can go to dinner at the same time. You, your wife, and myself.
Yeah, I'm going to ask her if she would be able to come over on Saturday, but that could be another meeting of ours. In the meantime, I could just simply drop the oscillator, the generator, and bring you the bread, so you could taste it. Back to you.
No rush on the pulse generator. I have two more, so I don't need it back. I don't want to see you make an extra trip. Saturday would be fine for me, and this way you can work on your experiments and don't worry about having to run all the way to Staten Island.
By the way, John, you sound beautiful. I love Kenwood 2000. I believe the single is more pleasant. Did you make the change for the bus, in your menu?
No, I haven't made any changes. I tried before when I was on Simplex. I was going up and down, fooling around with it. This seems to be the best setting right now. I do have my new Heil Pro mic on, so there may be a little difference in the audio, but it seems to be working really well. I'm getting great reports.
I wonder if you go to menu, the menu 21, menu 21, and press to be bossed. How would that sound?
All right, let me see if I can find it.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system. Node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Okay, I can hear you. You got to say a few words because the radio is starting.
Hi, this is KC2WGB. Wesley, how do you copy? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Like it better. Can you say a few more words?
Sure, I could recite the Gettysburg Address. Anything you need. This is my new microphone, and the boom. And it's giving me pretty good reports so far. How's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I like it better, although you sound a little bit different. You don't sound like a John that I know. I like it. Back to you.
Okay, I think I'll try it out for a couple of days and see what kind of reports I get with it.
Probably a few people are not going to recognize you.
Well, that's good. I can hide. Let me see what other positions I have on this.
Have a high. You have a... Yeah, you can try that.
AC2WGB. This is a high boost.
No, it's not going to work with your voice. It's good, it's clear, it's not John. Back to you.
Okay, this is it. Off. The processor is off. 1, 2, 3.
Oh, you put the speech processor?
I'm sorry, the base, the frequency response only, not that. Now this is the base. 1, 2, 3.
Well, what the base does is actually changing your voice, so... you don't sound like a John. I mean, you're still very much clear. You're just different. It's like, I'm gonna switch and show you how it is. Okay, I have a B-boss right now. And I have a conventional right now. That's conventional. And there's the B-boss. And if you can hear how did you sound with the... just a moment, hold on. Conventional, D-Boss. Oh, this is the high one that you were at. So this is the high one, right? And this is the high boss. This is the high boss. This is a F boss. The B boss. Which one do you like the best?
Hey, Wesley, KC2 QIQ. You are much more understandable when you go into the in the conventional mode.
Wow. Okay. Let me go to conventional. Okay, I'm at conventional. This is November to X-ray Juliet November. John, thank you.
Wesley, one other thing. Try going up. Try going back to 250 again instead of 5 kilohertz. And I'm wondering if in this conventional position. Whether your audio is going to sound good.
Okay, Glenn, I'm on right on the frequency with conventional. This is November to X-ray to hit November.
No, that wasn't the problem. Go back up 5 again. Yeah, but I think at 5 with the conventional, you sound really, really good, Wesley.
Okay, Glenn, what about mine? How does this sound?
Okay, and well, give me conventional and boost while you're all in at the same time. Because on your end, John, it's a very, very minor difference, but that might be because, you know, it's your right on frequency, where Wesley's plus 5, and I think with the B boost on top of it, it gives it kind of like a slightly distorted effect.
All right, this is all effects off. I'm in the normal radio mode now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That sounds actually pretty good, John, except the only difference is that I think with the bass boost, it sounds a little bit more full.
Okay, then I think I'll use that. Very good. Thank you, Glenn.
You can double-check with Jerry later. KC2QIQ, I'm just listening.
Jerry's sometimes up this late. I don't know what's happening to him. I haven't heard him in there yet.
John, are you on conventional right now?
Negative. I'm back to the one you said sounded better.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder if you go to conventional and Glenn could hear you.
Wesley, I did that, KC2WGB. I did both positions for him. He said this one sounds a little fuller.
Yes, he's right. Go back.
No, I'm on the one now that you like.
That's the one. Okay. So, whether I'm on verge of something new, or maybe not, what I believe is till the end of 2012, somebody, because it's like Dick said, 50 countries and plenty of people are actually dealing with it. I believe we're facing the biggest change in the history of the human being. If one, I'm not saying me, if one just release, not only make, but release, in the form of assembling the bookshelf of IKEA, the plans and the scripts and the description how to make this device, which could cost as little as $10 when it's made in China, then we're talking about, guess what? What is the war? War is domination. So what gives you the domination? Well, power, and power equals energy. No more mothers crying of lost life of their beloved baby daughters, soldiers, and sons. Back to you, John, and to Exil.
Well, you're probably right. If it went into mass production, it would be very cheap to make. It would be nice to see it come to fruition. I'm sure that man will invent a different problem to hasten the demise of the civilization as we know it. You know, Wesley, before on the net, I was trying to make the point that just because the planet has mass doesn't mean it's going to have that magnetic field. It will have gravity, but it doesn't have to have a magnetic field. And that's what I was wondering, would the device work where there's no magnetic field?
At first the question is, do we have a cosmic body with no magnetic field? As if the mass is sensitive to the magnetic field, and the gravity actually applies to the cosmic bodies with magnetic fields. Question to you and to Adrian.
Well, the moon is within the Earth's magnetic field, but I don't think it has one itself. I think it's a dead planet because it has no volcanic action that I know of, so there's no tectonic plates, there's no molten core revolving like we have here, which I believe is the reason we have a magnetic field. I know it has gravity 1/6, but I don't. I think it's totally devoid of a magnetic field. I could be wrong. Glenn, do you know anything about that?
Oh, absolutely, John. We all know that the moon is made out of Swiss cheese, and there's nothing magnetic about Swiss cheese.
I have a question to both of you guys. Magnet by itself, the magnet by itself, does it have gravity or magnetic field? John?
Magnetic field, not gravity. It has some gravity because it does have mass. But compared to its magnetic strength, the magnetic strength is much more effective, much stronger, I believe.
If what? If it does have a magnetic field and has a mass and some of gravity, we have a three-factor snap each to the other, and there is no volcanic eruption inside the magnet. Glenn, and to XJS.
Well, keep in mind, too, about magnetic fields, everything is relative. So when we measure a field, we're measuring the field with respect to Earth and everything around us. Now, if you pick up a piece of ferrite, and by itself, not magnetic material, but just dumb ferrite, and there's no currents around it, it's some magnetic field on Earth is going to be zero. But does that mean that relative to somewhere else in the universe, it has a charged field with respect to it? Probably so. But keep in mind, the field itself is relative to the other fields around it. So it's, as if the magnet is basically polarized because it's dipolar. So it does have a fixed magnetic field around it, where a piece of dumb ferrite by itself would have... we would assume that would have a zero magnetic field around it.
Wesley, I don't know if you can hear me. I think we lost her. You were saying you were going to sleep.